So reading, good morning everybody, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, Text 11, is that? 11, yeah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Satre mama sa Bhagavan hayat shirasto. Sakshat sayagnya purushas tapani varnaha. Chandomayo makamayo kila devatatma. Vacho babavur ushati swastosya nastaha. Satre, in the sacrificial ceremony, mama, of mine, asha, appeared, Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, Hayashirasha, with his horse-like head, atha, thus, sakshat, directly. Saha, he, Yajna Purushaha, the person who is pleased by performances of sacrifice. Tapaniya, golden. Varnaha, hue. Chandamaya, personified Vedic hymns. Makamaya, personified sacrifices. Akila, all that be. Devata Atma, the soul of the demigods. Vachaha, sounds. Babuvu, becoming audible. Ushatihi, very pleasing to hear. Shashataha, while breathing. Asya, his. Nastaha, through the nostrils. Satri mamasha bhagavan haya shirasato sakshat sayagna purushas tapaniya varnaha chandomayo makamayo kila deva tatma vacho babuvur ushati swasato syanastaha. The Lord appeared as the higher grieving incarnation in the sacrifice performed by me, Brahma. He is the personified sacrifices, and the hue of his body is golden. He is the personified Vedas as well, and the supersoul of all the demigods. When he breathed, all the sweet sound of the Vedic hymns came out of his nostrils. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So the purport is, the Vedic hymns are generally meant for sacrifices performed by fruitive workers who also want to satisfy the demigods to achieve their fruitive result. But the Lord is the personified sacrifices and personified Vedic hymns. Therefore, one who is directly devotee of the Lord is a person who has automatically both served the purposes of sacrifices and pleased the demigods. The devotees of the Lord may not perform any sacrifice or may not please the demigods as per the Vedic injunctions, and still the devotees are on the higher level than the fruitive workers or the worshippers of different demigods. Sorry, I've said things back to front here. Excuse me, I'm a bit tired today. The Lord appeared as the higher grave incarnation in the sacrifice performed by me, Brahma. He is the personified sacrifices, and the hue of his body is golden. He is the personified Vedas as well, and the super soul of all the demigods. When he breathed, all the sweet sounds of the Vedic hymns came out of his nostrils. So I didn't realize that higher grief, Lord Higher Grief, is such an interesting person. My goodness. He's the personified Vedas and the super soul of all the demigods. So that's not a small thing. Then it goes on to say, when he breathed, all the sweet sounds of the Vedic hymns came out of his nostrils. We can just slightly imagine how nice that must have been to hear. Even with great effort, it's difficult for me to make a sweet sound by purposely doing so, but when he just breathed, he did this. So it says here, Prabhupada says in the purport, that these Vedic hymns are meant for sacrifices performed by fruitive workers. And of course, we're not necessarily count ourselves as fruitive workers. Even though we work for Krishna, we dedicate the results of the work to him. And thereby, that fruitive work becomes devotional service rather than fruitive work. So we are not so interested in pleasing the demigods and performing Vedic sacrifices to achieve our particular material end, so to speak. But we are trusting more and more as we grow in Krishna consciousness to trust that even though we may be in need of some material benefit, if we leave it to Krishna, I was saying yesterday about how Krishna helped me so many times to get through circumstances a little difficult, a little testing. And we know in Bhagavad Gita, Nanyaschinta Yanto Mamye Janaha Pariupasyate, that he preserves what we have and carries what we lack. So the devotee is never the loser in his devotional service. And it just said, therefore one who is directly a devotee of the Lord is a person who has automatically both served the purpose of sacrifices and pleased the demigods. So it may be that we have passed through, because we have billions of lives behind us, but actually come to that point where we've done all the other stuff, all the swaha type of stuff. Of course, at times of weddings and all the other programs that life drags us through, processes us through, we have to nicely perform culturally. It's important to do things nicely and chant certain hymns and perform certain activities and sacrifices to invoke auspiciousness. But the devotee does it just to go through and make something nice and attractive. Very often the devotees get married on festival days, and in so doing attract lots of non-devotees to come to see and to see the beauty of the Vedic sacrifices as they unfold before their eyes. But beyond that, we're not so much interested because in the Vedic literatures, in the sense of their fruitive purport that they may have for us. In the Brahma Samhita, which is considered by the scholars to be, was discovered by Lord Chaitanya in the Adikeshava temple on his sojourn to the South India. He discovered this wonderful literature, the Brahma Samhita. You've heard of that, of course. And in the Brahma Samhita, there's some incredible, wonderful, breathtaking verses, most of them of which I don't have the slightest clue of what they mean. But some of them you get a small idea through the purports and the translations and purports of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura and our own Srila Prabhupada. And there Advaita Machutam Anadim Ananta Rupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayovanamcha Videshu Dulabha Madulabha Matma Bhakta Govindam Radhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So Lord Brahma says, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is inaccessible to the Vedas. Inaccessible to the Vedas. Which is an incredible statement. And only, of course, Lord Brahma and the Supreme Lord who inspired him to say these things could be qualified to say such a thing. How could we, in a sense, you know, diss the Vedas? But it says, but it's obtainable by pure, unalloyed devotion of the soul, who is without a second, who is not subject to decay, is without a beginning, whose form is endless, and who is the eternal Purush. Yet he is a person who is always manifesting this blooming youth. So all of a sudden, the Vedic literature is swept aside for this young person who is in blooming youth. It takes precedence over every other prayer and every other aspect of the Vedic literature. Of course, we know that the Vedic literatures are Krishna's doing through his expansions and the writings of the Veda Vyas. We know that all these things are coming from him. And we know that at the beginning of time they were also extant in the form of sound vibration rather than being written down. But whether they're written down or whether they're just spoken and remembered orally, they're given by him. So the demigods who so many of us are enamored by, and sometimes we feel we need to take shelter of them in astrology and getting certain types of gems and that to appease the demigods. And of course, there's nothing wrong in trying to make the path of bhakti a little easier, because sometimes it can be a bit bumpy ride for us. Mainly due to our own doing. But all the demigods themselves are subordinate to the Lord. We know that. And in Brahma Samhita, it's very, very clear. Even Lord Shiva, who is perhaps the mightiest of the demigods, Shiram Yatada Divikara Vishesha Yoga Sanjayate Nahita Taha Pritagasti Hetu Ya Shambhutam Apita Ta Samupaiti Karya Govinda Madhipursham Tamaham Bachami. That just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, and yet the effect curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, namely milk. So I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu, that Shambhu is the name of Lord Shiva, is a transformation for his work, for his performance of his service for, in the performance of destruction, which is Lord Shiva's performance and one of his main, when he does his Tandava Nritya, that's when he shows his big guns at that particular point in time. So even Shiva is dependent on Krishna. So then they're different and non-different, like milk and curd. But milk can always be curd, but curd can never be milk. We know that. So we know that Lord Shiva is actually subordinate to Krishna. And he, fortunately for us too, is the great, great devotee. What's the Shambhu? Vaishnavam. Thank you. So Lord Shiva is the greatest of the demigods, actually, and greatest of the devotees. And each one of our great demigods are beholden in every way, in the Brahma Samhita. Shrishti Sthiti Pralaya Sadhya talks about Madhugar, who who's just a shadow of the Chit potency, worshipped by all people as Durga. And her job is to take care of the maintenance of the universe and give and take away these bodies and the creation itself. And she's the partner of Lord Shambhu, Lord Shiva. But she is dependent as well. She's just a shadow of the Chit potency. And then the sun, Yachchakshuesa Sabita Sakala Grahanam. We worship the sun because it's so great. It never goes out. All these years of burning, billions of years of burning, it never goes out. So it's worthy of worship. And of course, in the when we do our Gayatri, the first line is worshiping the sun and gratitude to the sun. Yachchakshuesa Sabita Sakala Grahanam. Raja samasta surumurti rishesha teja swiyam kiya prakati yatya patatva datru govindam adipurusham. The sun, who is the king of all the planets, the king of all the planets, the image of the good soul, is as the eye of this world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power he performs his journey, mounting the wheel of time. It's so nice when you read these purports and these shlokas, it makes your hair stand on end just to think about that. And how is the sun burning without burning out? We don't understand. We never have an experience of that in the material world, except for the sun. It burns, and it burns. That ring of fire, is supported by the Brahma Jyoti, which is pouring into it. So it's full of infinite effulgence. How is the sun burning like that? Full of infinite effulgence, which is coming from Krishna, from Krishna's lotus feet. But as a yadpada padava yugam vinidaya kumbha, it's coming from Krishna's feet. And the yogis, I suggested, the yogis, they can only approach that effulgence. That's as high as as close as they can get. And the gyanis too. By trying to find out the non-differentiating Brahman through the process of elimination of the mundane. So, not possible. And Ganesh, whose lotus feet, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet are always held by Ganesh, or the pair of tumuli, the trunks, protruding from his elephant head, in order to attain power for his function of destroying all obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. Here is Krishna. Here is our Govinda. This is whom we're so proud of. Sometimes devotees are a bit proud. I'm feeling a bit proud now, remembering him. But he's our Lord and Master. And every one of the demigods is great and is powerful. And you know, it would be nice to have their blessings and their associations. But we can actually presume, by being humble devotees of Krishna, or trying to be at least, that we have their blessings, that they won't harm us. And if they harm us, it's for some absolute good reason and ordained by Krishna. So we have such beautiful opportunity in this life. And it says the devotees of the Lord may not perform many sacrifices to please them, the demigods, as per Vedic injunctions, and still the devotees are on a higher level than the fruitive workers or the worshippers of different demigods. So we have in the Brahma Samhita as well, I remember the why is Krishna what he is? He is just because he is what he is, and he has what he has because he has what he has. That's all his. The whole shebang is his. We are his. There's nothing that's outside of him. There's nothing that is within us or without us that is not his. But we just have to give up this this independent rebelliousness, which I feel so strong in so many times. I was playing to one of the devotees yesterday a little snip of a song. A couple of weeks ago, one of my favorite artists, Phil Everly, from the Everly Brothers, passed away. And as a kid, I was very grateful to the Everly Brothers. We were living in post-war England, and it was like the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, I guess. Quite depressing places. We tried to build back the houses, and London was bombed out, and so slowly people from London were moved out and were put into prefabricated houses. Actually, I remember in the concrete along the street, it marked into the concrete was this area was built by German prisoners of war. So we'd taken some captive and made them work. And so a difficult time for the whole of Europe, for Germany itself, of course, who were badly bombed by us and the Americans. And ourselves, who taken a smashing from the Luftwaffe. And so we were growing up in a difficult time, but of course we didn't know as kids. We just thought that's how things are, you know, things are tough and things are hard. And then we got a radio and we heard music for the first time, recorded and broadcasted music, which I wasn't so interested in, to be honest. It wasn't that pleasing to my ears. And then I heard the Everly Brothers, "Dream." And all of a sudden, life was worth living. And they made many beautiful records, and I loved them, Buddy Holly, Elvis Presley. It was like a gift, I think, from the material energy, saying, okay, you've had some difficult times. Now we're going to make the party. We're going to liven you up. We're going to make it, you know, a little bit okay. So Elvis came, and Buddy Holly came, and then, of course, Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, most of the names of which you don't know, but they're the foundations of popular music now. And then, of course, the youngsters who are hearing this were the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. And, of course, bang, you know, this whole renaissance of music and hope came again. That perhaps there is another way instead of bombing the hell out of each other. Of course, they didn't have the full understanding, but the Beatles were definitely the MA of music. Definitely the MA of music. But George Harrison was the PhD of music. If you study the Beatles and then you listen to George, he's the ongoing development of music, because he took it into that soul space. Many people spoke about soul. Like, I loved Otis Redding. I don't know if you ever heard Otis Redding. Did you? Otis Redding. And all the black music. It was called soul music, and they were singing about, you know, the pain and the feelings of pain inside and the yearning and that. But they didn't quite know where to take us. Otis Redding was singing songs like that, about the change is going to come and how it's going to be better and how there's hope. And but he would sing, "Sometimes I wonder what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long, long, long time coming, but I know a change is going to come." So the change was coming, and it was coming through the Beatles and through George Harrison. And at that same time, Krishna said, okay, this is the moment. Prabhupada steps in on that world stage as it's being cultivated for Prabhupada to come in. By no means a cakewalk or a washover for him. No, very difficult for him. But still, it was there. The ground was fertile, for there was unrest. People didn't want to get dragged into another war. And of course, when we had the Bay of Pigs drama, we were just kids at school. Khrushchev had sent the Russian missiles, nuclear missiles, and trying to establish them in Cuba, right next to Russia, to America. So it was a very frightening time. I was at school at the time, and we were being told, if there's a nuclear attack, you have to sit under your desks and all that stuff. What a joke that would have been. We'd have just, us on the desks would have just been whisked up into the never world, so to speak. And then John Kennedy stood up against him and said, okay, if you do that, you have to turn these ships back. If you don't turn them back, we're going to blast you into oblivion, you know, whatever. So there was this whole thing going on. And people didn't want war again. They'd just come out of one. We'd just come out of one. 1945 it ended. I was born in 47. And the year we were, in 1965, again facing this. So people didn't want that. So the change had to come. And it came in the form of Srila Prabhupada, which is incredible when you think about what he's actually done. He has established this movement all over the world, including Russia, and now including China and Taiwan and all these places. The mercy of the devotees here, and Srila Tamil Krishna Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's instruction. And it's all coming. These incredible miracles are coming, not because of worshipping the demigods, not because of taking shelter of this one or that one, but actually of worshipping Krishna. Actually, I heard, I don't know if this is true, anybody of you know Russia, but you know when Gorbachev was there and the perestroika came and the openness to, you know, and the fall of communism came, do you remember that? Not so long ago, and the devotees came out of Russia for the first time in the 80s or the 90s and were allowed to come to India. Gorbachev, someone told me in Russia that Bachev means please come. I don't know if it's true, but you know, that's what I was told. But Gora certainly came, and now they can't get rid of him. Putin is coming back as part of the KGB and the old guard, and he's trying to re-establish the old ways of Russia, the communist. So it's kind of a democracy, which is it's still a kind of a communist state with masquerading as democracy. But they won't be able to hold back the tide now, not now the Gore is there. They won't be able to do it, it's not possible. They couldn't kill it off when the devotees were undercover. They put them into concentration camps. They injected them with mind-bending drugs. They couldn't do it. But the devotees weren't calling out for Ganesh, as great as he is. They weren't calling out for Lord Shiva, as great as he is. They were calling out on Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And sometimes I feel afraid to call out for Krishna because of my disqualifications. But we can call out for Gora. We can call out for Nittai. And I just thought, if you don't mind, I'm just going to read from some of the wonderful stanzas from the Vedic literature about Gauranga. I hope it's not too tiresome for you, but it's worthwhile hearing. Here is how many Vedic utterances about Gauranga Mahaprabhu there are. There may be more, of course, but look how many there are there, all from the different. So, very often, you know, in the 80s, I remember Srila Tamil Krishna Goswami, that famous pasting of the Sai Baba devotees. You remember they said Sai Baba's God, and, you know, and it was kind of a merciless beating that the poor man got. But sometimes a guru has to cut like that. And he established an avatar is not an ordinary thing. It's God himself. And Krishna is avatari. He's not avatar even. You know, in... what's his name? Jayadev Goswami's Dashavatara Stotra. Balaram is the avatar. Krishna is avatari. So we can consider Mahaprabhu on the same level. He is both Radha and Krishna combined in a sense, more complete than Krishna himself. And here, Of course, we all know the Sangopangastrapasana. In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he's Krishna himself. This is from Bhagavatam. That's a very famous one. There's so many of them. I won't read them all because I don't want to be tiresome to you, but the Mahabharata now. Mahabharata, in his early pastimes, he appears as a householder with a golden complexion. His limbs are beautiful. His body smeared with the pulp of sandalwood, which seems like molten gold. In his later pastimes, he accepts the sannyas order. He is equipoised and peaceful. He is the highest abode of peace and devotion, for he silences the impersonalistic non-devotees. These are such nectar verses. Such nectar verses. Now, in Mahabharata, and this is Krishna Yamala Tantra, I shall appear in the holy land of Navadvip as the son of Sachidevi. So even parents are being mentioned. Like if we look in Bhagavatam, we can see Lord Brahma is predicted. You were born of Mother Anjana in the province of Gaya, and this is what he'll do, etc. So this is the one of the requisites that one is required to have when they start talking about this person is an avatar. First of all, he has to be mentioned. Then he has to, okay, what does your guru look like? Is he beautiful in every way? Oh, I love him. Okay, but show me a picture. And then you see a very ordinary looking person, maybe with long hair, which of course they keep their potency and power in. Their Shakti is in their hair. That's why when Bhaktivinoda took Vishakishen, he said to them, he's so powerful, but hold him down and cut his hair off. And after that, no more power, no more potency, because they carry the Shakti there. So we don't have to worry. We're not driven by Shakti, we're driven by Bhakti. I mean, I've got long hair, but you guys don't have. But that's no problem. Don't think that, because Krishna is our power. Krishna is our power, and he's the source of everything. Sometimes, this is in the Brahma Yamala Tantra, sometimes I personally appear on the surface of the world in the garb of a devotee. Specifically, I appear as the son of Sachi in Kali Yuga to start the Sankirtan movement. Now, there's one here also from the Atharva Veda. The Atharva Veda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the Supreme Enjoyer, whose form is transcendental, who is beyond the touch of the three modes of material nature, and who is the all-pervading Supersoul, residing in the hearts of all the living entities, will appear again in the Kali age, appearing as the greatest devotee. The Supreme Personality of Godhead will assume a two-armed form of golden complexion in his abode of Goloka Vrindavan, manifest on the bank of the Ganges at Navadvip. He would disseminate pure devotional service in this world. And there's loads more. Purans and Upanishads. Let's have an Upanishad, because you might say, it's just the Purans. These are Smriti, they're not... But listen, Upanishads. In the middle of that lotus city is a place called Mayapur. And in the middle of Mayapur is a place called Antadvip. That place is the home of Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chandogya Upanishad. And there's a dozen more. So when Lord Brahma was seeking Krishna's advice, he had this perfect opportunity. The demigods got this particular wonderful boat which they sailed up through the universe and entered through the coverings of the universe into the spiritual sky. And then they saw all the incomprehensible extent of the spiritual planets, which are so big, they're unmeasurable, and so many of them. And they were passing up higher and higher and higher through the Vishnu's and Narayan's planetary systems. And then finally, Golokanani Nijadami Telya Chatasya. Devi Maheshu Haridabha Suteshu Teshu Tete Babhava Nijaya Vihita. lowest of all is Devi Dham. Next above it is Mahesh Dham. Above that is Hari Dham. And above them all is Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, by whose conferred power maintained the manifest potencies in all the other leaders and of all the graded realms. So it's at the top of Krishna has advented himself, and he's advented everything else. There's no nothing superior to him, Ishvara Paramaha Krishna. No one superior to him. He's the cause of all causes. So Lord Brahma gets to Goloka, and instead of there being, you know, big Jay and Vijay standing there protecting, he's just some nice little cowherd girls with sticks. And he's thinking, wow. And they approach him boldly but humbly and say to him, "My dear Lord Brahma, what do you require?" And he said, "I'd like to see Krishna Govinda, please." So they said, "Just a minute." And so they go, you know the story, and they go to Krishna and they say to him, "Lord Brahma's here." He's very shocked when he hears him say, "Which Brahma?" Lord Brahma didn't even know that there's a billion Brahmas with all different potencies, and he's only just a little four-headed Brahma, a little itsy-witsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny Brahma. He's not the Brahmas with a thousand or a million heads. This is beyond our comprehension of what's going on, isn't it? And so he says, "Oh yeah, the one, you know, the one Trivikram, with four heads, and the one with the universe where Trivikram kicked the hole." So he said, "Oh yeah, bring him forward." And Brahma was completely astonished, and then as he went to bow down, so Krishna called all the different Brahmas, and they all put their beautiful helmets and the heads of his lotus feet. How physically that could have taken place, we don't know, but Krishna is the breaker of, he's the maker and the breaker of physics, so he can do these things, and still the inconceivable can be achieved by him. So they all came, and Brahma was again mind blown. And then while he's talking to Krishna about his predicament, all the avatars, different avatars, are coming into Krishna, appearing from all over the different cosmic manifestations. All the avatars are entering into him, and he's talking just like this. Oh yeah, he's not going, "Oh, hang on a second, I just talked to you, so I just got to take this." They're all coming into him like this. He's just sitting there nonchalantly speaking to Brahma about his issues, his small issues, which are big to Brahma. And they're all entering into him. So he got a wonderful blessing there to see how Ishvara Paramaha Krishna Satchidananda spends his days sometimes. So we are so fortunate. Let me just see the time. Excuse me, all these glasses, but I broke mine just before I came here. What time is it? Oh, I should be stopping. Okay. So, I hope that kind of ties it back around to Krishna's supreme nature and how we are fully dependent on him for everything we do. And if we make ourselves fully dependent on him, we can be assured that we don't have to be too intimidated by him, whether we know billions of shlokas from the Vedas, or that we perform certain Vedic fruitive activities and sacrifices, because the supreme sacrifice is just to chant Hare Krishna and to give it to others. It's simple as that. Simple, simple, simple stuff. So any comments or suggestions or questions? Everybody's okay? Great. Oh, okay. You haven't heard them before?
No. Not even particularly.
And I was wondering if they're from Shivaramaraj. Yeah, some of them are from Shivaramaraj's books, but they're all taken from Vedic literature. So they're not conjecture, you know. So you can be sure. Maharaj is so careful about those things. And even he's just written these 9 books on Vrindavan. 9 books is a set with the last book is a set of maps, about 100 maps of the different parikrams you can take and all the different pastimes that took place there. So such a blessing. If you forgive me for saying, and I don't want to put Maharaj up for criticism, but it seems like Prabhupada just spoke to him and said, okay, they want more, they want to know more about that, I'll use you. And for 6 years he just sat there, pretty much. He hardly even was able to answer any letters from his disciples. He said, I'm just going to do this. And he got so ill, he nearly died last year over it, because he was just sitting, and he got prostrate problems of sitting. When you get to our age, it happens. If I sit at the computer for a month writing a new album, it comes on. Anyway, it's mine. But I'm just doing a new album. He's doing something really important. So, yeah, he's so careful about these things. And if you read any of his books, he before all the pastimes come, there's a massive tattva, there's a massive explanation on how you should approach this and how who should hear it and how you should or should not speak it to. You know, he's very, very careful about those things. So you can be sure that Maharaj wouldn't do anything to compromise Srila Prabhupada's position of the great Acharya, the great the global Acharya, the universal Acharya, Jagat Guru. So he wouldn't do anything like that. He'd rather die than that. He once said to me, sorry to say, but he once said to me, Prabhupada said, jump out the window, he would have done it. He said, I just had so much faith in him. He said, if he said, just jump out the window, he said, I would have done it. I had full faith that it was the right thing to do. So, sorry, Prabhu? Yeah, so anyway, we're so fortunate to have so many great personalities in our movement. And some of them are in this room as well. So my humble obeisances to you all. And my begging for blessings to continue my service without offence to the devotees. If I have made any offence due to my rock and roll nature, please forgive me. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Does anybody want that? You'd like it? Maybe if anybody else wants it, they can. Could you copy it? Could you copy it for our friend? And give it to anyone they want, because there's so many nice ones there, you know. I love it. And does anybody else love the Brahma Samhita? The Brahma Samhita. Isn't it great? Oh God, I'm just addicted to that. I know it's way beyond me, but it's just so nice. It's so beautiful. I recorded it in the 80s. It was the first recording apart from Bhagavad Gita. I did a Bhagavad Gita opera. And then I did Brahma Samhita with 4-part harmonies for the 4 heads of Brahma, you know. So I did all these things. But now I've heard that Havi Prabhu, as you were playing yesterday, has done a wonderful version of it, so I'm looking forward to hearing that. I know that one or two of the devotees have that. But Brahma Samhita, yeah, I was able to learn all the verses by making my own tunes to it. Do you do that, Braj? Sometimes, if it's difficult to learn a verse, just try to put your own little tune to it. Well, it doesn't have to be a great tune, you know, just something that you... And I learned loads of verses just because of that. In from Brahma Samhita, I know it all because of that. And then I thought, my God, I don't know the translations. So I put the translations to tune, and now I know them. And it's, you know, I'm showing off, but that's how to do it. Put them to a tune. Someone like you could, you know, you've got so many tunes coming out of your head. If there's anything you want to learn, excuse me for instructing you, don't mean like that. Just put it to a tune, your own tune. You'll get it and it'll just be there forever. Never go away. Hare Krishna.
Thanks for the nice concert last night.
Oh yeah, we were just getting into the juicy bits when we had to stop. No, of course it's so important.
to hell with my concept. Stop. You know, we get the neighbours as enemies. We're going to be in trouble. Yeah, yeah. Think it was fun. Yeah, we're getting there, weren't we? I like to do everything with fun. You know, in the spiritual world, I know I'm eventually, when I get there, I'm going to be. I'm going to be somebody else.